Troy Rank, columnist now for the Denver Post, one of the lords of the keyboard. He joins us now on the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline. Troy, you took the trek to Boulder to take in the Deion Sanders show yesterday, his first press conference of spring football, and I had a chance to watch it last night. Wow, he did not disappoint.
Yeah, listen, that's the first time I've been in a presser with him. I've seen most of them. He is, I wrote in my column, he's part Tony Robbins, part Sermon. You know, you can feel his energy, especially, you know, given, you know, he reminds you, I covered him as a player. It reminds me of Deion as a player. He's in a better position. He feels like his staff's better. He has better players. But, you know, as I wrote in my column, he's never going to be just another coach. There's never been anything like him as a college football coach. And what he did last year was amazing. But now it's about winning. I mean, there's a sense of urgency because Shedeur Sanders, Shiloh, and Travis Hunter are all going to the NFL after this. So as much as there's been excitement around the hype, this year they've got to show they can, you know, finish and win. And I think anything less than 7 wins would be a massive disappointment, in my opinion.
Yeah, he is he's just an interesting cat. And you know, what did he say about, do you have any specifics that he talked about with his coaching staff and with what he thinks this team can accomplish?
Well, Livingston, they brought in as a defensive coordinator from the Bengals. You get the idea of the pro concepts and how they're going to use them differently, especially in coverage, that they should be better there. I mean, they gave up, I mean, I don't even know how many yards they gave up on crossing routes last year, that it was embarrassing. And they bottomed out against Washington State. And I'm not blaming just the coordinators. But then offensively, Pat Shurmur, you know, I'm not his biggest fan. Anyone that's listened to the show knows that. But Pat Shurmur, there's two things working in Pat Shurmur's favor. He and Shedeur Sanders work well together. Shedeur clearly likes him. And secondly, they're going to try to run the ball more. And they need to get him under center. I know, Mark, you would love that. But you cannot throw 55 times a game and then blame your line for everything. Like, at some point, you have to run the football. And I think we'll see that as well. But it was funny. I asked Deion about, you know, how he thought he did as a game day coach last year, because I think there were times he clearly looked like, you know, he needed help on the sideline or whatever, and he didn't appreciate the question.
No,
which I understand.
No.
But he said, you know, I'm my harshest critic. I'll always be more harsh critic than any of you. And he, you know, he's looking at me. But then in his last answer to the presser, he came back,
yes,
to, well, one of the things I learned was about coaching, and that while you think it's a fit, it's not really a fit. And he finally allowed that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a fit with Sean Lewis. It wasn't a fit with Kelly, his defensive coordinator, and that's why he changed. So we'll see. You know, synchronicity with those coordinators is going to be important. He's got, what, counting him, 9 of his 12 coaches have either coached in the NFL or played in the NFL. So maybe this is the group that kind of gets everything aligned, and they're going to be better. Their offensive line is going to be way better. That's clear. I mean, they basically revamped the entire line. But I just think Deion has something to prove as a coach. He holds his players accountable to a very high standard, which I appreciate. But now as a coach, I think he needs to take the next step forward.
Visiting with Troy Rank, Denver Post columnist. Troy, how are you reading the quarterback tea leaves for the Broncos in the draft?
Well, it's certainly their position to take one, given their inactivity. You know, they weren't going to overspend for Sam Darnold. They weren't in on trades for, you know, they didn't sign Jimmy Garoppolo or Drew Lock or Jameis Winston, and they didn't want to trade multiple picks for Sam Howell. And everyone asked, like, why not Justin Fields in a sixth-rounder? And I'm sure you guys have talked about this. I was traveling this week. But Justin Fields is Russell Wilson. He just does not fit Sean Payton's offense. Whether he's younger or more athletic, it doesn't matter. He doesn't fit the offense. But their posture suggests they're going to take one. The curious thing to me is, if that guy's J.J. McCarthy and you're sitting at 12, everyone I talk to now believes McCarthy could go in the top four and not fall further than the top six. Well, that's the Trey Lance trade. That's 3 ones and a 3. I mean, do you want to do that for McCarthy? I mean, I like the guy, but I'm going to be honest, I don't like him that much. So, or do you stay at 12 and take Bo Nix, or do you trade back and take Bo Nix at 20 and then pick up a second rounder? But everything positions them to take one, but we're going to find out. We're going to find out how much Sean loves one, because if they're going to move up, man, that's going to be an enormous price for a team that's rebuilding. And rebuilding means rebuilding to the draft. And I don't know if you want to sacrifice that much collateral, but if you love one, it doesn't matter. Nobody cares 5 years later if that was your guy.
Let me ask you this. So let's say, because everything gets pushed up, as you know, when people take quarterbacks where they probably shouldn't take quarterbacks, that means great football players fall to you. Could you see a scenario where they take a Brock Bowers at 12 and then wait until the third round and get a Spencer Rattler or a Michael, or like a Michael, what's the guy's name from?
Pratt.
Yeah, Michael Pratt. Could you see that scenario playing out?
I mean, there's no doubt that if four quarterbacks go in the top four or top six, there's going to be players pushed down that you're like, man, I can't believe that guy's there. And that could be an offensive tackle. Brock Bowers, there's a very good chance he could be there at 12, especially if the Chargers go, if trade out or they take a lineman at five. I mean, they like Bowers. I know that. You know, again, it's not the history of taking tight ends in the first round is not great, but they need one. And he is one of the best that's come out in years. I mean, he's kind of that Kyle Pitts type player. So could I see them staying there and taking Bowers, staying there and taking Jared Verse, staying there and taking an offensive tackle? Yeah, I could. I mean, they need good players. That's the thing. I mean, the reason they're rebuilding, whether it's unannounced or not, is they need more good players. And so the idea of taking the best player on the board at 12, that's appealing. That's appealing because that person's going to be a plug-and-play starter. I mean, I just looked at a graphic this morning, the 2020 draft class. Every one of them's gone except Justin Cernod. You know, great special teams guy. He's a special teams guy. You can't keep missing on the guts of your draft and have any roots to your rebuild. You can't do it. I mean, because free agency, you overspend, and in most cases, you're overspending for mediocrity. Guys reach free agency for a reason. So could I see him staying there, Mark? Taking an edge rusher, taking Brock Bowers, I could. I mean, the strong argument is to move back from like 12 to 20 or 22, take the player you want there, and then you pick up a second-round pick. And what would be interesting if you do it that way is you would then have the opportunity to then trade back into the first for maybe a Bo Nix or a quarterback to pick up that fifth-year option. So, man, there's a lot of things on the table for them, but they seem to have a clear vision of where they're going moving forward, which that's good.
Troy, last one, about 45 seconds. I know as a baseball guy you're following this. What do you make of this Shohei Ohtani story? This seems fishy. Something smells here.
It's not going away. And the fact that the interpreter on Tuesday night told ESPN that Ohtani was involved and that he paid off his debt, he's a great friend, and it was $4.5 million, and he didn't like it, but he's the one that paid off all my debts. I can't thank him enough for this. And then before the story airs and ESPN reaches out to Ohtani's lawyers and they say, no, he knew nothing about it and he was scammed of $4.5 million, something doesn't jive. I mean, it's just hard for me to believe Ohtani wouldn't know his friend is gambling. They're around each other all the time. I've been around Ohtani a little bit. Those two are inseparable. And if you've been around people that gamble, and it doesn't bother me, but if you're around people that gamble and gamble that much, it would be hard. You'd be hard pressed to tell me he didn't know he was gambling. So that's it's going to be interesting to see where this comes out. Is this all the interpreter that had a major gambling problem and Ohtani covered for him? Or is the interpreter suddenly becoming the fall guy? I mean, I don't know, man. This story is just really odd.
All right. We'll follow it. Thank you, Troy.
You got it. See ya.
Troy Rank, our Denver Post columnist on the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline. Good stuff there from Troy.